You are listening to Living for the Cinema with Jeff Gershon. I am a cinema enthusiast of all genres, here to discuss with you one film every episode. The good, the bad, and the ugly of what makes each film unique. Spoiler alert. No matter when this film was released, there's a good possibility I will be revealing spoilers about the plot or even possibly the ending, so just be warned. The Parallax View, which came out in 1974 and was directed by Alan J. Pakula. It stars Warren Beatty, Paul Apprentice, William Daniels, Walter McGinn, Kelly Thordson, Chuck Waters, Earl Hinman, and Hume Cronin. The genre would be conspiracy thriller.
Independence Day is very meaningful to me because sometimes I've been called too independent for my own good.
It is the conclusion of this committee that Senator Carroll was assassinated by Thomas Richard Linder. The committee wishes to emphasize that there is no evidence of any wider conspiracy. No evidence whatsoever.
These people were killed. And whoever killed them is going to try to kill me.
If you qualify, and we think that you can, we're prepared to offer you the most lucrative and rewarding work of your life.
This story is going to mean more to me than $10,000.
Fella, you don't know what this story means.
I recently watched this movie for the second time, and I found it actually much more engaging, much more engrossing than the first time, where I think it left me a bit cold. This is a conspiracy thriller, which is very 1970s paranoid, and beautifully shot with a strong, unusually relaxed performance from Warren Beatty as the lead protagonist, Joseph Frady, a small-time Oregon news reporter who tries to uncover the mystery behind the death of a U.S. senator, along with several others who were peripherally involved with said senator. And even though tons of wild stuff keeps happening to his character, Beatty is honestly not given much to do besides let the plot unfold all around him. But that does seem to be the point, and he acquits himself well.
You mean if you didn't see it, it's not there?
Well, I didn't say that. It's just that I know all about these accidents. Ralph Scoletta was a known lush. He hit a piling on the George Washington Bridge. He killed three other people with him. Joy Holder died of anaphylactic shock when the doctor gave her the wrong antibiotic. Herbert Moon burned himself up in bed smoking, which his girlfriend always told him he was going to do, and Harry Lutz had a heart attack.
Harry Lutz was 40 years old. It's too young to have a heart attack.
No, it's not.
He was thin. He was in terrific
bullshit.
Condition.
He found out his wife was banging her psychiatrist, and on the same day, a bulldozer accidentally knocked over half his house. Come on, he was lucky to last that long. That's future shock, Lee.
Now, I wish I could say I found the final climax more affecting, and maybe if I'd first seen this in theaters upon its initial release 50 years ago, and before dozens of other conspiracy thrillers which would follow it, I might have. But it's just very telegraphed. But beyond that, there are just too many memorable and genuinely nutty sequences throughout this movie which precede it.
You know, there for a moment, I thought you were a man. But you aren't, are you?
No, I'm a girl.
Why don't you go right over there and tell those people that real loud?
Don't touch me unless you love me.
I told you to go over there to that table and tell those people who you really are. Now, you don't want me to ask you again now, do you?
For one, there is a brief but harrowing opening sequence set at the top of the Seattle Space Needle, which effectively sets a foreboding tone for the story which follows. And that's pretty much this movie in a nutshell. The overall story often feels remote as we alternate between inventive set pieces involving Joseph and his dramatically different interactions with a couple of other key characters, mainly his trusting editor, played sharply by the late, great Hume Cronin.
You gotta admit, it's funny.
It makes me laugh, but I don't think it's funny.
What's that supposed to mean?
Have you ever laughed at a comedian when he pretended to stutter?
There's nothing funny about a man who stutters, but people laugh. They're amused, but they're not happy about it.
You're not going to print this?
Hmm?
You're not going to print it?
Not only am I not going to print it, but this is the end of your series on local drug problems. We're in the business of reporting the news, not creating it. Joe, we went through all this 6 years ago. When I agreed to take you back in January, I made two suggestions. One was about your drinking. Well, you seem to have licked that. The other was that you curb your talent for creative irresponsibility. You can start working on that right now.
And the apparent recruiter for Parallax, who keeps following up with him quietly. And that would be the mysterious Jack Younger, played eloquently by the late Walter McGinn. He sadly passed away just a couple of years after filming this too, at the age of 40. He steals every one of his scenes with an eerie performance carried by the soft tone of his voice.
The Parallax Corporation, you did apply for a training, didn't you?
Oh, Christ, that.
As you know, Parallax receives demands from all phases of industry, demands for unusual personnel. If you qualify, and we think that you can, we're prepared to offer you the most lucrative and rewarding work of your life.
I know your tests suggest that you have remarkable talents.
Yeah, what do you mean by talents?
You have difficulty holding on to a job, don't you?
I don't know. I just don't like to take a lot of shit, so people say I got antisocial tendencies.
Right. But tell me, has it ever crossed your mind that maybe it's everybody else's problem that they don't get along with you?
Why?
Because, you see, the very quality that gets you in trouble is what makes you potentially invaluable.
What's that?
Your aggressiveness.
Aggressiveness.
And now the categories. The first category would be the best needle drop. This is the best song cue or piece of score used throughout the runtime of the film, because music is essential to film. Now, as was the case with other paranoid thrillers from this era, this is a relatively quiet film with very little music heard throughout. Regardless, the music that we do hear is quite effective, and that would be from the late, great New York City native Michael Small. And apparently, providing eerie minimalist scores for paranoid thrillers in the 70s seemed to be his forte, as he also composed music for Clute, The Stepford Wives, The Driver, Night Moves, along with previous episodes The China Syndrome and Marathon Man. The latter of which has a pretty similar score to this one, no less. Yeah, we're definitely going for that disquieting vibe, aren't we? We mainly hear this at the beginning and end of this movie, along with at least one suspense sequence in the middle of the film. But it's just a non-melodic orchestra phrase punctuated with some high-pitched piano and horns. This is pretty much the main theme of the movie, but it's also known as the Parallax Commission. Next category would be wasted talent. This is the most underutilized talent involved with the film. Now I'm gonna have some fun with this one, and be warned, Marvel fans, I sometimes go in this direction and it just seems like an ideal time, so bear with me as we have just had the 10th anniversary of Captain America the Winter Soldier, a film in that franchise, the MCU, which is beloved by the fan base, beloved by the general public and critics as well. It was a huge hit. Pretty much everyone except me. Now, not to say that I ever found it to be a bad movie. It's not. I just always found it to be merely okay. But if there was one aspect of that film and the marketing leading up to it which really stuck in my craw, Well, it's actually the way that it was always described by the filmmakers, the Russo brothers, and Kevin Feige, and the fans, and even critics, as a throwback to a 70s paranoid thriller, along the lines of the Parallax View. They often cited the Parallax View. And sorry to all the hopelessly indoctrinated MCU fans out there, but if you're checking this out, this movie, I mean, with the hopes of it being Winter Soldier 74, you're going to be sorely disappointed because there is no self-aware mainframe computers to explain the plot. No Deus Ex digital face masks.
I'm sorry. Did I step on your moment?
No helicarriers smashing into skyscrapers resulting in zero casualties. One of my gripes with that movie. And sorry, none of the myriad of folks who are assassinated in this film are magically brought back to life for the third act. Both Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and the Parallax View involve conspiracies in their plots. And the similarities pretty much end right there. Sorry, I just had to get that off my chest. Whew, I feel better.
This isn't freedom. This is fear.
And now, the trailer moment. This is the scene or moment that best describes this movie. For me, the highlight probably occurs about halfway through the movie. By this point, this movie has already racked up an impressive body count. And yet, this particular sequence features no violence. It's all about training, as Joseph has allowed himself to be recruited by the shadowy Parallax Corporation. And once he has proceeded past their initial testing period, Joseph is personally invited there to their headquarters to privately view a somewhat repetitive training, or possibly brainwashing, reel of images.
Welcome to the testing room of the Parallax Corporation's Division of Human Engineering.
You will now please cross to the chair, and you will sit down, make yourself comfortable, and be sure to place each one of your hands on the box on either side of the chair, making sure that each one of your fingers is on one of the white rectangles. Just sit back. Nothing is required of you except to observe the visual materials that are presented to you. Be sure to keep your fingers on the box at all times.
Which run the gamut from various world leaders, current world leaders, to comic book characters, to famous tyrants, to images of murder, to images of naked adults copulating, all this set to a folksy Americana score playing overhead. And throughout this montage, this sequence, we keep cutting to an occasional black screen highlighting one key word, such as love, mother, father, happiness, or country. Now, we've seen sequences along these lines going back decades, all the way back to the deprogramming montage forced on Alex just a couple of years prior in A Clockwork Orange. But what somewhat sets this one apart is that the individual watching it is kept in the shadows. We do not see any interactions from Joseph. Just the whole presentation just kind of sits there, inviting the viewer to process it on their own. Just a brilliant sequence. And now the final category, the MVP, the person or people who are most responsible for the success of this film. Of course, special props must go to DP legend Gordon Willis, who did the Godfather trilogy, for all of those fantastic wide shots. I mean, the dude just ruled the 70s. The late, great Willis contributed a great deal of atmosphere to this story. And that's the thing about this movie. Even when you can't quite grasp the narrative, it just becomes more about the overall vibe of grim hopelessness, which starts to envelop our protagonist. Overall, the biggest kudos still have to go to director Alan J. Pakula for just nailing that tense vibe so well with his selection of shots, his transitions, the performances that he keys in from the main cast, and it's all the more impressive that he pulls this off with a narrative which is filled to the brim with varying locations and a variety of incidents. I mean, we've got bar fights, loony car chases, brawls on rapid waters, tense airplane bomb set pieces. It's all effectively shot, but it never feels cathartic or just for the sake of spectacle. It just keeps our protagonist on his toes throughout, along with the audience. If nothing else, you could even consider this a tasty appetizer to his more grounded meal of a true crime masterpiece to come 2 years later, and that would be previous episode All the President's Men, which is an all-time classic. But for delivering an effective thriller, very much of its time, Alan J. Pakula is the MVP.
Parallax, I wanted to deal, one, with action, and two, all the other films I've done, and most of the films as a director, and most of the films I've done as a producer, really deal with very personal stories. And I was looking for ways of dramatizing the absurd contrasts in American society that we take for granted as the norm, because we live all the time. I want to start with the 4th of July lock parade, because I want to start with Americana. And I want to start with sunlit Americana, the America we've lost. And I was fascinated by the idea of, when you look at this country, of the layers of civilization, Stone Age to here, and it's been like compressed like this.
My rating for the Parallax View would be 4 stars out of 5. Happy 50th anniversary to one of the more influential and iconic thrillers of the 1970s. Even though it might not have been appreciated as much at the time it came out, it holds up pretty well. And if you're looking to watch The Parallax View, it is now streaming on Hoopla, Canopy, and Showtime TV. And that ends another Lone Gunman review. Please like, subscribe, and share the Living for the Cinema podcast, and follow and like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Letterboxd. And join us next time for another review from Living for the Cinema.